Europe is complicated. Remember François Fillon? He's back, in court form. Previously in Europe, Fyron. Hello, and welcome to another Previously in Europe. This week, we have some fun stuff to discuss, but first I forgot to introduce us. I'm one of your co-hosts, Hugh, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Kieran.
What is the deal with all these dick references?
Yes, we'll get to that in a minute. So this week, instead of discussing the impending Brexit apocalypse that is happening on Tuesday and the impending collapse of the UK government or any of the other international fund things relating to the US government shutdown, which everyone loves talking about, we're going to discuss some important Greek Macedonian politics and then some insider baseball French stuff, and then Swedish government stuff, and then German government stuff in the reverse order of what I just said.
Well planned. All right, I'll start us off with some German government stuff, because I live here now and I find it kind of embarrassing if you start telling me about what's happening in Germany.
Yeah, that's not great.
No, I'm just really not paying attention at that point.
Yeah.
My German's not great. I mostly just go with what pictures are being shown on the, like, S-Bahn. On those little TVs they have. Anyway. So, everyone's favorite anti-Euro party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they've been anti-Euro for a while. AfD. They've been being weird. Like, really weird lately. So, as of recording, their party conference is, like, ending. And they're having this party conference. Like, one of the big agenda items on this party conference is figuring out their campaign for the European elections, which are happening this year.
Mm-hmm.
From other political parties that have been tracking in Germany, they've kind of sorted this out already. This seems a little late.
Yeah, but it's in the... So it's in conjunction with picking who's on their party list, which other parties have been doing. So, like, there was a notable... notably, the CDU announced theirs, and, like, the longest-serving member of the EU Parliament isn't on it, which is the reason I saw it. It's, like, notable for that reason.
Okay.
But it's kind of... It's the time period where countries that have party lists are picking their party lists.
That's fair. But anyway, one of the agenda item things that have come out so far is that the AfD is talking about Germany leaving the European Union. And I say talking about because a lot of articles have been leading with this, like, they are campaigning for leaving the European Union, which is not really what happened, but it kind of... So, basically, what's been put on the campaign, like, platform stuff, wording is yet to be finalized. That'll probably come out tomorrow or the next day. But they said they will leave... They will push for the country to leave the EU if changes to the way the bloc operates, including abolishing the European Parliament, are not enacted within a suitable time period. Is worth pointing out that this time period has not been defined. So, like, it's very, like... I didn't want to say they're leaving the European Union because a lot of parties across Europe kind of have this position of, like, if the European Union goes to shit in some way or another, we're out.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, that's fair. But this is a weird one to lead with because, one, they haven't really made a lot of their demands clear, like, other than abolish the parliament and it needs to return to its sensible core, the EU.
Yeah.
That's how they refer to it. So, like, I don't know, bring it back to the European Commission of Coal and Steel or something. It's important that our country doesn't remilitarize. Anyway, the other side of this, though, is that, like, the party membership were, like, really gunning for, we need to, like, what they called it, an orderly dissolution of the European Union needed to happen by 2024. That's kind of what they were like, but the leaders were like, no. Germany is quite pro-EU. Last polls on this were like 75% of people are in favor of the EU in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is like, this is not a campaignable, you know, position, us leaving the European Union.
It's
a weird one because like, this is kind of flying in the face of what we've been talking about largely in the Facebook group and like over the last couple episodes has been like a position change for a lot of other far-right parties in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Both like Le Pen and Salvini have kind of stayed, like have become more quote-unquote pro-EU,
mm-hmm.
Which is like basically the new, we've talked about it before, but the new far-right agenda seems to be hijacking the European Union rather than leaving it. This is happening for a myriad of reasons, but like, it's odd that this is still on the agenda or possibly on the agenda for like AfD membership.
Mm-hmm.
Other silly things that are happening with the AfD is... so their strongest state in Germany is Saxony-Anhalt.
Mm-hmm.
And the former leader of the former leader of the AfD party in this state, Saxony-Anhalt, Andre Pogenberg, announced on Thursday he's gonna start his own party, which is cooler than the AfD and like totally better and totally different. It's called Aufbruch Deutscher Patrioten. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's basically, they decided to split this party. Pogenberg is not like an unpopular figure amongst AfD supporters.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's fears amongst AfD people that he's going to like split the party and actually going to like in the strongest state remove a lot of AfD support.
Yeah, I think once you're looking at losing the location where you had the best chance of having some like regional power, for instance, if you split the AfD vote in Saxony-Anhalt, then there's really nowhere where they have a good opportunity of getting any actual like local power or, like at a state level.
Yeah, I mean, unless they have like some sort of coalition deals, which is totally possible because like it's pretty common in German state governments to
have coalitions.
Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I'm just looking at a regional map of Saxony-Anhalt from the last election, and it is one half CDU in the north, and then the south, one half AfD, and then what I'm assuming is some sort of metropolitan area has gone to Die Linke. 22. What is 22? Oh no, never mind. It's just some nostalgia, probably. Then that's not a region. Oof.
Yes, people who just strive for a return to East Germany.
It's a thing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's the I think this is like a move of just I think this is what you see with far right movements that don't have a strong coherent leadership set up, or they have a problem of party membership stepping like having a slight dissynchrony with the actual people who are in control. And you do kind of see this when you saw this effectively like with the current situation with UKIP in the UK, where most of their MEPs are quitting the party because they're like, well, the party membership has, the people who are now in control of the party system itself and the people who have been bubbling around at the constituency level for a very long time aren't on the level of the people who were getting elected as MEPs at all, and they were like far more extreme with a lot of views, and would then like start making like eventually will start making the party platform something that doesn't fit with what the elected officials want.
Yeah,
and you do end up seeing stuff like this where there's splinter parties forming that may or may not go anywhere, and it kind of is possibly happening at a time when the AfD is kind of rocky anyway. Like this happened when the AfD all got like their incoming cohort of German parliament members got elected. The one of their co-leaders quit at a press conference on her first day.
Yeah.
So it doesn't scream of a party that is like together.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. When you were talking there, and as soon as you mentioned UK, I remembered like the disastrous like leadership elections that happened after Nigel Farage left. And then that got me thinking that like AFD is like the only one of these far-right parties that I can think of that doesn't have a cult of personality leader.
Yeah.
Like Lega has Salvini, National Rally has Le Pen. I can't even remember Geert Wilders' party's name. I just remember Geert Wilders.
It's got a lot of V's in the name, I think.
But that's like all Dutch politics.
No, very true. And then like you see in some of the Eastern European countries, there's a few countries with the system of there is a party with a non-leadership figure who is controlling the party, like with an agenda. So there's like a agenda force going on somewhere. Like that's what you have in Poland, where the their ruling party are like not controlled. That's why they've had so many prime ministers. but there is someone running the running the table, which is not what you have with the AFD and not what you have with like Five Star to a certain extent. You end up like, but that's part of their like actual core. Core plan, but you end up with okay, well what if there's a period of disagreement, or you end up with a wildly unpopular stance that's very popular with the extremist party membership, like let's maybe leave the EU, which won't poll well in Germany.
So it's really interesting that like just kind of like last little thing to say about this would be that the polls are starting to reflect this weirdness. Like there's another bunch of things surrounding AFD in German news. Like there's the data leak where like suspiciously or not suspiciously, yet to be determined, like the AFD were not included in that data leak. And then one of their leaders got attacked recently, things like that. But like the polling on AFD has gone down quite a bit. Like there was that, those were fears for a long time that the AFD were the second most popular, going to be the second most popular party, due to like SPD's collapse. But what, so things we can say for definite is the Greens are well and truly ahead of the AFD. The Greens are now the second most popular party in the parliament, in the Bundestag. But then a lot of poll aggregates are now kind of declaring SPD being slightly ahead AFD. Yeah. Like this, I'm talking about like 15 versus 14%.
Yeah.
So don't go like running into the courtyard about this. But a lot of the poll, like most recent polls I've been seeing, AFD is is straddling somewhere between 12 and 16%, and more often than not coming at like 14 percent in the polls, whereas the last couple of polls the SPD are holding kind of steady at like 14-15% and not really going below that too much or at all, which is to be expected with like a party that has like such a tradition like within Germany. Like 15% is fucking miserable for what's considered one of the two main parties of a country. But this kind of happens when you have these like two main parties in a country, even if there's like a shock thing where they don't do very well in an election, they have a very high floor compared to other parties.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see how this whole, once they're mad, like the entire actual like manifesto plus party list is completely solidified, see if and how that affects their polling for the European Parliament at all. Because effectively, like, if the AFD doesn't do well in the European Parliament elections, it's not a great sign for their apparent, you know, continued rise from, like, remember when we were talking about the AFD are polling at an all-time high of 12%? It's just, like, we're not in that territory anymore, but there's no continued rise, which was what some people anticipated, and some people, like, there was talk of them doing very well in the Bavarian elections, which didn't really pan out because the CSU kind of took back over.
Yeah,
I think you've mentioned to me previously that the AKK being named the head of the, like, chancellor in waiting, effectively, of the CDU, who is a lot more anti-migration, for instance, which is the thing the AFD is successful at hitting the conservatives on, is probably a signal of, well, maybe the conservatives will become a little bit more conservative, and that will placate a lot of the people who were going over to the AFD. So it'd be interesting to see.
Yeah,
what the...
I think it's more like, to be honest, I think it's more that AKK has, like, people were just kind of sick of Merkel. A lot of people, like, she'd been ruling for a very, very long time, and a lot of people just wanted change in Germany, and this has satisfied some people's desire for change. New, like, leader of the CDU.
And it's enough people to result in a 2% swing in a poll. It's like, this is the thing. It's like,
this is the most populated country in the EU. It's a lot, 2%.
Yeah. No, I know, for sure. Yeah. But that's my point is, like, that's, in the current numbers we're talking of how fragmented the parliament is, where that a 2% swing in a poll is quite significant. Sorry, I realized after I said it that sounded like this is useless and bullshit. We shouldn't be talking about it. But actually, no, it's like annoyingly pertinent, because people need to remember there is an election coming up in March. No, in May. Wait,
May. Yeah.
In May. Okay, so moving on. We talked about that for much longer than I intended. Moving on to another bit of nonsense before we get to our main topic of Greece. Does anyone remember Penelope Gate? The one of the wonderful, wonderful scandals of the French presidential election that resulted in getting old babyface elected. So this was François Fillon. When he announced his candidacy for when the French conservatives had their weird, like, US style primary system, and there was, like, an actual election, so as bizarre.
Yeah.
So he was, like, seen as
the shoe-in.
He was like, well, basically the conversation was, whoever wins that primary is the president, because whoever the socialists put up will lose, and Le Pen may or may not get to the second round, but, like, even if she does, she'll be crushed by the conservative candidate. So, and then Fillon was being very much compared to, like, oh, Fillon's the French Margaret Thatcher. Yeah, it was like, he's a free market conservative, and he's going to reform France. It's going to be, like, big, big reform. And then, well, one, he wasn't very popular anyway. Like, he was popular in the Conservative Party, but he wasn't polling at, like, more than he was I don't think he was ever polling at more than 30%. Like, he was never in any hope of, like, he'd get in the second round, if he got in the second round anyway.
I forget, was Juppé hot shit before or after François Fillon?
Before. Because that was that primary nonsense, right?
Yeah, everyone thought it was going to be Juppé, and then it was Fillon.
Yeah, because Juppé was not popular even within his own party. yes, but one of the things that is, that at the time Fillon was very, like, he was indignant about, this was like a bullshit media slam on him from the left. That what got dubbed Penelope Gate, which is the scandal that a number of French politicians used to get embroiled in a lot, where they were, having jobs for their family members that were just, they'd be on the payroll, and therefore their parliamentary office would just give them free money, so they were taking in two salaries for the family.
Basic income for political relatives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. only political relatives, and often spouses, that where you have a setup where you have a joint bank account, and therefore the money is just for you. So his wife Penelope had worked in his constituency office, then in his parliamentary office, and then worked for one of his allies, and then worked for him again, I believe. And also potentially his daughter had worked in some speechwriting capacity for him. And I think they worked out that those speeches did exist, so he could prove that happened. The French prosecutors are now saying that they can't find any evidence, like, Fillon can't produce any evidence that proves that she ever did any work, so they want to bring it to trial.
Nice.
Like, criminal trial for effectively embezzlement from the government. Similar to a few weeks ago when the Sarkozy trial was moving ahead, looking into whether he took illegal campaign contributions from Gaddafi. which it's turning out he probably did. So,
Gaddafi. You know,
That's not a great look for the French conservatives of two elections in a row. First you have Gaddafi money, and then subsequently you have embroiled in embezzling from the government fund. So, yeah, there's that.
That's not good, no, is it? God, I want Gaddafi money to be like... I just want them to run a campaign where they're just open and honest about it. Where actually, like, they just go out into a public square meeting for the conservatives and, like, you get some Gaddafi money and you get some Gaddafi.
I mean, yeah, the money was in the millions, so actually, you know...
Just do that.
You dole out a few euros here and there to every French person.
Yeah, like, you get, like... a 5 euro note, and yeah, then a novelty 5 euro note with Gaddafi's face. Just like looking over Europe knowingly.
Oh dear. Well, let's stop talking about France. Let's move north.
Moving north to Sweden. We're going to talk about Sweden very briefly here, which is to say that Sweden has a government. Mm. We talked about the elections quite a bit. Me and Hugh had a heated conversation about whether the far right was still on the rise or whether we should be concerned or not. And that was an interesting... I think that was probably one of our more interesting discussions, we thought. Yeah. Anyway, Sweden, they now have a government. And it's probably the best thing we could have hoped for. Mm-hmm. So the divide was that there's like two large factions in Swedish politics. One was called the Red-Green Alliance. Something... I can't remember the name of the other coalition. It was like... It was the bad one. It was the one where, like, the centrist and conservative parties, like, worked together. And then yeah, the Swedish Democrats were, like, going their own way. Mm-hmm. They weren't in any of these big coalition-y groups. But then, like, everyone thought, oh, the conservative centrist one is going to work in a power-trading relationship with the Swedish Democrats, because it's the only way these, like, these kind of align or these work out. And I was like, well, no, apparently not. So what has basically happened is that the center party and liberal party have left this conservative bloc. Mm-hmm. The centrist parties have left the conservative bloc, and they are willing to work with the red-green bloc. So this means that the Social Democrats, the Greens, the Liberals, and the center party have backed the incumbent and now new prime minister, mm-hmm, Stefan Löfven, again, to be prime minister, and thus keeping the far-right Swedish Democrats out of government. Yeah. But the most important thing is everyone needs to Google Swedish Liberal Party logo and then, if necessary, rotate your phone 90 degrees. It's very funny.
You should include a link in the show notes.
Mm.
And we'll just leave it at that. The
not safe for work.
Yeah, this strikes me as a bit of a let's all just go to the pub and wait until this thing all blows over kind of approach to this problem. Mm. The problem of the Swedish Democrats, which is the conservative bloc are effectively saying that we agree they're too crazy for us, so we're just going to potentially enrage our supporters by continuing to support the current government.
Well, no, because the way it works is that the conservatives did not back
I see it's a liberal. Sorry, I was thinking of Danish politics. In terms of names of parties, that's I understand. Yeah, so the conservatives aren't involved at all. It's basically the centrist people from the conservative bloc are now in an agreement to back the current government. That is probably the best solution.
Yeah, and I don't think the supporters of that party, like, they kind of centrist party and liberal party kind of strike me as kind of ALDA type people, where they're more people who believe in the extremity, like the extremes of politics. Mm. That no matter what happens, we must not support the extremes of politics.
Yes, I see.
you can support social democrats, you can support conservatives, that's fine. We don't really care either way.
Yeah, yeah.
As long as you don't support the far right or far left.
Okay, that's fine. My hot take is invalid, that I'll move on.
I mean, no, this could do nothing to stop the rise of the Swedish Democrats, but that kind of depends on like their campaigning over the next couple of years and what happens there.
Yeah.
And also like the popularity of the Social Democrats within Sweden is still, as far as I know, on the decrease.
Mm.
So yeah, it is just kicking the can down the road, but maybe next Swedish election, it'll probably just go back to the conservatives then, and the centrist parties will just switch allegiance back to what they were before. That'd be my guess.
Nordic politics. Surprisingly like the TV show Borgen. Okay, on that, I think we can move on to our main topic, which is talking about some right-wing Greeks and how they're just like your right-wing Greeks. I mean, your right-wing parties in your countries. They're petty and they're nationalist and they care about petty nationalist things a lot, despite their other policies possibly being more important.
Yeah, they're just like your regular right-wing Greeks that you all know. You ever gone out for Slovakia and the guy just keeps talking about how like Cyprus isn't a real country?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The goddamn Turks.
You know, with my Greek friends, I've never like thrown out there like those goddamn Turks. But I wonder now if I did, if they were like out with Fyram.
Giant Golden Dawn party logo on their chest.
Yeah. Yeah, well, to get to the Golden Dawn. But first to Macedonia, because they're kind of like, initially I thought this was going to be a quick like update thing we would have to talk about, because the Macedonian parliament approved the Prespa agreement that includes changing their name to the Republic of North Macedonia, which was on the edge of not happening, because they initially had that referendum that the hope was that if the referendum passed, then people in the parliament would feel like obliged to vote for it, even though the referendum was non-binding.
Right.
But then the turnout in the referendum was so terrible that the opposition party effectively said, see, we told you your referendum was invalid, and therefore we're not listening to it. So the concern was, in order to get this agreement passed, because one of the parts of it involves changing the name of the country, they need a supermajority in the parliament, which was 80, and the government doesn't have 80 seats. But they managed to negotiate an agreement with Albanian ethnic minority representative party to get over the line. And so really, we thought this would be the hard part of this whole agreement that kind of opened the way to, number one, we could stop calling the Republic of Macedonia Fyram, the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia.
Yes.
And we could just call it the Republic of North Macedonia, which is, on a map, it's kind of West Macedonia, but that's not important. and then they could potentially join NATO, and then EU accession talks could potentially begin pending some, you know, reforms Macedonia would have to get through. And potentially the Macedonian government would change hands, and a lot of that stuff would end up not happening. But the joining NATO probably would happen before any like big shift in Macedonian politics happened.
So the EU thing is like, Macedonia has been very slowly working towards EU membership. Like, they've cleared some chapters already in terms of accession talks.
Yeah.
It's just that they there was always that like looming specter, because the last thing an accession is like unanimous approval of all the existing countries, and Greece was going to say no.
Yes, yeah. Which is why they haven't joined NATO. There's nothing that precludes them from joining NATO, and from a location strategic point of view, it would be quite nice to have Macedonia, because otherwise you have land borders that cut NATO parties off from each other.
Yes, yeah.
Because effectively you then have Western Europe followed by the what used to be Yugoslavia as a block of not NATO countries, and then Turkey and Greece, which is problematic. But so now the Greek parliament need to pass this, and dramatically over the weekend, the defense minister has resigned over this. So, like, the first rumblings of this was, so Merkel visited Greece over, like late last week, early, like, during, over the weekend. Yeah, no, on Friday. She visited Greece on Friday to kind of bolster talks to get this passed in the parliament. And this is possibly a sign of, oh yes, well, we know there's a lot of opposition. So the main opposition party, which doesn't have a lot of, they have like 70 seats in the 300 seat parliament, they're against it.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the coalition partners is against it. But that didn't seem that important because, so the Independent Greeks, or ANEL, as I will continue calling them now, ANEL, they make up 7 seats of the coalition, with Syriza, Tsipras's party, who have 145 of the seats. So Tsipras's party is, you know, controls most of it, and then they do need these 7 seats to make up their majority. But the head of the party, who's the defense minister, Panos Kamenos, initially he wanted there to be a referendum on the agreement in Greece, as there was in Macedonia, and that kind of got shut down as it's not happening. Because in a lot of ways, like, this agreement effectively is the me looking at it as a non-Greek nationalist.
Yes.
This seems like the Macedonians are making concessions, and then Kamenos says that this is capitulation, signing it, which, again, it's the Macedonians changing the name of their country, changing the name of a load of infrastructure that you don't like being called Alexander the Great, but effectively their position is that the ethnic population of what is currently the Republic of Macedonia isn't like the historic Macedonia ethnicity that the Greeks are, so therefore they shouldn't be allowed to use the name Macedonia at all, which seems to me like petty and weird, but, you know, I don't understand nationalism in most countries, including my own country. So, yeah. So this has created, like, a bit of a problem, obviously, because if the Greek government collapses, then they obviously can't pass this. And the deadline to pass it is, like, mid-January, so it's kind of, you know, they were hoping to do it this week, which is why the dramatic resignation. So
question, is it not mid-January already?
Yeah, so the deadline is soon. That's why they need to vote on it.
Right.
So Tsipras has announced that he's not going to have fresh elections, in theory, and there's going to be a confidence vote in what would then be a minority government, probably on Thursday. They said they're going to do debate from Tuesday for possibly 2 days, so Wednesday or Thursday. But, like, this gets more complicated because the ANEL party isn't, like, they don't all agree with Kamenos, and effectively his position is, if you vote for the deal, you're out of the party. And if you don't resign your ministerial post, because some of them are ministers as well as he has him, then you're out of the party. So effectively, it's now, so at least 2 of them have already gave press statements to the press and interviews saying that they will vote for it. So effectively, what you're now having is that party is effectively starting to fall apart, and therefore is partially bringing the government down with it, so it won't have a actual majority, but will possibly have a comfortable passing of the confidence vote. And if they pass the confidence vote, they should be able to get the majority they need to pass the whole agreement. But what really seemed like it was in the bag is really like way more teetering on the edge than the Macedonian side now seems to have been. Which is kind of just like, I feel bad for Tsipras, because, you know, he gets a lot of shit, and a lot of it's like well-earned shit, but this seemed like a nice legacy. Was, we're solving the Macedonian problem, and Macedonia can join NATO, and they can be part of the cool friendly country club.
Yeah, because a lot of, like, Greece's, I feel like a lot of Greece's problems is its of why it's kind of considered like a sick man of Europe is also due to its, like, surrounding neighbors. A little bit like Greece was always kind of considered, for one reason or another, a Western European country, due to like political allegiances during the Cold War, yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. And they are like the richest part of the Balkan Peninsula, like in a lot of ways. But the other, like, they joined the euro, and like one thing about the euro that makes the euro really beneficial is if all your neighbors use the euro as well.
Yeah.
Which is not the case with Greece. And they, like, you have to travel, like, by land, you have to travel quite far to reach the next nearest euro-using country.
Yes.
Which is technically Montenegro and Bosnia, just because they just don't have their own currency.
Yes. Yeah. I always forget that. But
Yeah, right?
I don't get to go over to Bosnia and Herzegovina enough.
I made a day trip to Montenegro while I was on holiday in Croatia just so I could check my balance in euro on the ATM.
Oh.
This is before mobile banking.
Ha!
And I was like, check balance. And it would be in like Croatian money that I forgot the name of. And I'd be like, this is useless to me.
That'll be something to tell the next generation. You can be like, back in my day, you had to go over the border to check your bank balance.
Travel 25 miles in the snow.
Okay. Yeah. So this is like I think this is bringing attention to the whole problem of Cyprus's government isn't long for this world anyway, because they have to have an election by October.
Yes.
And the polling does not look good for Syriza at all.
No.
To be fair, the polling for the last election looked like the New Democrats? Is that the
New Democracy. Yeah. Neo-Democratia.
Like, yeah. So the polling for the last election, like in the run up to it, showed that Syriza and them would be quite close, and then it turned out that they weren't. So there was like almost a there was like a 8-point difference ish between them, which resulted in like quite a big seat difference. But it's now looking like they would probably swap places, and the polling has been very consistent comparatively. Like, it's the New Democrats, who are the kind of center-right party, are kind of comfortably polling in the 35% region, and then Syriza are polling in the 25% region.
Yeah, like 10% difference would, is... Oof.
Yeah, that could result in that. That would, like, they don't have a parliamentary majority now, but that will probably put them out of the running for easy formable governments, which basically means like if they don't get this done now, like New Democracy are for instance against this deal, and would also probably block a lot of things like Macedonian accession to the EU with a name like the Republic of North Macedonia. Yeah, so it's created an interesting situation where like, do you remember when Syriza was a new, like, left-wing movement, and they're now, like, even with the big drop in polling, they'll still be the second largest party?
Yeah, they've definitely supplanted any kind of other left-wing movement within Greece, because... So, like, Movement for Change, Kynema Alegris, is, like... a brand new party, and they're like the SND, socialist and democrat representation in Greece. Let me just check when they formed. 2018. It's a merger of like a bunch of various. I would say broad left, because you've got some social democrats, but you've also got some democratic socialists here. Democratic left and Movement for Democratic Socialists, but then you have Democratic Alignment and PASOK, which is the Pan-Hellenic Socialist Movement, but you know, this is Southern Europe where socialist means social democrat rather than actually socialist. It's an interesting one, but like they're there and they're polling as well as Golden Dawn, which is oof.
Golden Dawn are polling quite well, like compared, yeah. Like similar to the German situation. Basically, in Greece, there are like kind of two front runners who are actually quite far, like separated. Like the unless unless stuff changes between now and October, which, you know, long time. And assuming this confidence vote all works out for Tsuritsa, which it should, but the thing is unclear. Like, they're looking at cobbling together a win of a confidence vote in a minority government at a time when there are large chunks of the parliament that don't like a signature piece of legislation they want to get passed and have a short deadline to get passed. So, yeah, it's complicated, and I think this week in Greek politics will be exciting.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Is there any? Do you know why the stated reason why the KKE won't work with them, the Communist Party of Greece? Because they got
15 seats.
Yeah, they got 5.6% in the last election, and they're polling about 7% now.
I would need to check, but my vague memory is that they wouldn't have gone along with the continued bailout setup. Effectively, to get the KKE on board, you would need to give them something. And what they would want is all stuff that would make you in breach of the bailout agreement that now they're free of, and they could make changes based on stuff like that now. Potentially there might be some wrangling of some sort of agreement, but Tsipras has moved Syriza, which might have been more in line with what the some stuff the KKE get on board with. But I think they're quite far from a Marxist Leninist party now.
It's an interesting. I'll look into the why these guys are quite apart, but I think you're right. The polling in Greece and the party setup in Greece is reminiscent of what Germany was before. I don't know. I'm trying to think before when, but
before this election. I think not before Grand Coalition, but there was a point in the Grand Coalition where the SPD were polling very far behind the CDU, who were polling fine. And you had the situation of, in fact, no, you had a very similar polling situation where you had a lot of parties polling around the 10% margin, and then some parties who were polling below the threshold to get into the government.
Yes.
CDU was polling 38% or something at one point. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the SPD, when Schulz became their candidate, was polling in the mid to high 20s. And then after the election, now the CDU are where the SPD was, and the SPD is where down where the AfD was.
I'd be very interested in this now, because the only material difference is that Syriza is associated with the European left rather than the SND.
Mm.
And the reason they are not as far right or as far left as someone in that situation should be is because of this international pressure and the bailout packages and stuff like that that they were kind of effectively forced to implement. So now that they're supposedly free of that, I think it all depends on the campaigning they would have to do for this election.
Yeah, so an awful lot could change between now and October, but I understand Tsipras's position. His statement following Kamenos's resignation has effectively been, we need to continue the reforms that are in progress, the anti-corruption stuff that's in progress, and reinvigorating Greece's position on the world stage as not a joke bankrupt country. And a country that is not blocking another country's NATO membership over a name.
Yeah, which, that doesn't look too harsh, does it?
Combined with mass corruption and potentially defrauding the Eurozone, it's not a. It wasn't a good look. And if his position is that, possibly nothing will change polling wise because he's unpopular for the reforms to a certain extent.
God, I hope the Greeks. I just love this country so much. I just love Greece so much. I just after you listed out everything they've done or everything that to be associated with Greece, I'm just I felt such rooting for them in an underdog and a straight TV Disney kind of film about sports. Just go Greece.
Yeah.
Come on,
lads. They'll be fine. As long as they, this week will just determine a lot. I think, so if they don't if they don't pass the Macedonia agreement in the parliament this like in the next few weeks, which is largely based on whether or not the Syriza's minority government can get a confidence vote, like that's a pretty big fuck up in terms of like, you know, real substantive like international change you wanted to enact as like a primary goal of your government that falls apart due to losing a vote by what would probably be like five seats, or if there's two people already on board from the you know the right wing party you formed a coalition with for some reason, losing the vote by like two or three votes seems like a it seems that would be awful. I really hope that doesn't happen. That'll be fine. I'm not worried about it. Are you worried about it? Oh dear.
So there's a whole section on the Communist Party of Greece's Wikipedia page called The KKE and the Macedonian Issue. The article, the section of the article starts with, after the Balkan Wars in 1912 to 1913, it's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
I prefer parties that have been founded in the last 5 to 10 years. I don't have to listen to any of their history.
Why can't you be more like Kinyama Algaraz? They were formed 2 minutes ago.
And they have a very clear Wikipedia page of a few lines.
Here's what's on their website currently.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Just copy and paste it from there. That's I'm fine with that. And then you don't have any of the bullshit of, oh, and they have these crazy rules and these votes for party leaders and stuff. And you're like, no, they picked something recently. It's whatever the normal thing to do is. Anyway, I'm not worried about it. It'll be fine. Everyone, if you don't want to listen to what's happening with the Brexit vote, I strongly recommend you listen to what's happening with the Greek vote on the Presna agreement.
Oh, excellent. And that's going to do it for us this week, guys. Thanks for listening to the show. The show is produced by the two of us, and we really appreciate your support and your listenership and reviews. We like reviews. Give us some reviews there on it's not called iTunes anymore. It hasn't been called iTunes for ages, but I'll it hasn't been called Front National for a very long time, but I'll never get used to that either. Or Lega Nord. Oh, I'm so set in my ways. Anyway, Apple Podcasts. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever else that has a review function. I think maybe Spotify does. I'm not entirely sure. I think it's just like a star rating. That stuff helps, and it helps, you know, other people listen to our podcast. And that's really great because we're a big family here. Oh, come in for a hug, guys. Oh, anyway. Other things about the podcast is tell a friend about it in real life with your words and your mouth. And that helps a lot too, because word of mouth helps with the podcast. And what else? We have a Facebook group where we have lots of cool discussions. We've been talking a lot about like the far right in Europe and what they're doing, and they should stop it, mostly. We have a Twitter at Prev in Europe, which is fun. I tweeted something stupid about Württemberg earlier today. And let's see what else we have. We have an email. We love to hear from you guys. Send in all your questions and weird things about the country you live in. previouslyineurope@gmail.com. And we have a TeePublic store, which is in the show notes. And I put up a new t-shirt today, which is about Hungarian politics and who really controls it. Spoiler, it's not George Soros.
It's chickens. Five ROMs out via anal.
Greek politics sounds like a weird pharmaceutical ad for suppositories.
Anal, yes. Fire arm out. It's just so good.
And just the Liberal Party logo. It's the same.
I just I don't understand how this happened. Okay.
Do Swedish people not know what dicks look like? I don't understand.